Hello and welcome to Jibe Talking, the Volvo Sailing Podcast. I'm Guy Swindles, and in this edition we have a real offshore legend, Magnus Olsen. Apt then that he's been appointed the third ambassador for the Volvo Legends Regatta, taking place in Alicante before the main event. Talking of which, we catch up with race director Jack Lloyd as a crucial new rule for the race comes into operation. Thanks to our friends at the Barcelona World Race, we hear from Zabi Fernandez, Andy Mickeljohn and Wouter Verbrack. And in the second half of our interview with Stephen Park, Matt Sheehan gets the lowdown on Scandia Team GBR from the team boss as the 2012 Olympics hove into view. But first, as always, it's the Volvo Sailing Podcast news headlines. Verbeck Paprec continues to lead in the Barcelona World Race, faces a tough time with the weather as the finish line approaches, with Matt Frey in second continuing to close. Team China announced it's to challenge again for the 34th America's Cup. The Velux 5 Oceans fleet leaves Punta del Este on leg 4 of the race. Gutek Gutowski is the early leader. The weather, in the shape of gusty winds and big seas, plays havoc with the SAP 505 World Championships in Australia, while Magnus Olsen is the latest ambassador to be appointed for the Volvo Legends Regatta. Talking of which... Well, this week we're joined by now an official legend, Magnus Olsen. We knew he was already, but now he's been... appointed one of the ambassadors of the Volvo Ocean Race Legends Regatta. Well, first of all, Magnus, congratulations, and how did this come about?
Thank you very much. I guess it came about that I am perhaps a good spokesman for Volvo Ocean Race and Whitbread, because I've done the race so many times and I love it, and I really appreciate that this race has to continue for a long time, and hope it will. So I guess that was part of it, that that my attitude to the whole thing.
Now, it's going to be quite some occasion, isn't it, with all the old boats and, more to the point, all the previous sailors turning up. I imagine there could be something of a party going on.
I hope we're going to have a fantastic party, and we have to have a good party, and I hope as many as possible of the old sailor turns up, and I think we're all going to appreciate that, and we're all going to be happy. We're all going to tell crazy, stupid stories from the old times, that it was better before, and so on and so on and so on, and I hope we can drink a lot of beer together.
Now, Magnus, you do have a spectacular record in this event, starting as a rock star with Simon Le Bon on drum back in the 80s and all the way up to the very last race. I know it must seem difficult, but are there any particular high points or low points from your career in the Whitbread and Volvo?
Well, I probably have forgotten all the low points, so I concentrate on the high points, and of course, my dream has been to win this race. And after my fourth try, we won it with EF. So that, of course, is a high point. Every race has its high points. And it doesn't have to be the victories. The high points can be other things. It could be relationship with other people. It can be... just a fantastic sunset, going around Cape Horn, becoming a friend with somebody that you didn't like before, and suddenly you start to click with each other. That could be a high point. There's so many different things, but when it comes to the hardware, of course, it was nice to win the race with EF and Paul Cayard as a skipper.
Which brings me on, because you ended up skippering a boat in the last race, of course, Ericsson 3. Is this a bit soon to become an ambassador, given that you were actually racing last time?
I don't know. I think I was living on a little bit of a borrowed time last time. I got the opportunity, and I'm very happy I took it, to at last become a skipper at this very high level. That's something I've never really thought I was good enough to become or whatever. Anyway, it was a good experience, and I really appreciate that. So if that's the end of my career, I'm happy with that.
Now, Magnus, do you know what your ambassadorial duties may be?
Well, I don't know yet. I hope I can live up to them. I know there is two others, and they seem to be more qualified than me, but I'm sure Volvo or Howard or whoever can find some good things for me to do, and I hope I can fulfill my obligations.
Now, I think you're being a wee bit modest there, though you're right. Lady Pippa Blake and Sashay Blythe, of course, the other two ambassadors enrolled so far. Magnus, looking ahead, how do you see the future, perhaps, of the Volvo Ocean Race? What are your thoughts on the forthcoming event, for instance?
It feels like the last time and this time, it's a crucial time for the race to survive. I think it definitely is the best race there is, if you like, ocean racing, no doubt about it. Of course, it's such a commitment, both when it comes to the people, the hardware, the money. So it's not so easy to get enough competitors in the race. And I think Knut has done a great job to try to get the budgets down a little bit. And I think he will. We just have to survive good this time, which I think we will. And then I see a bright future for the race, and I'm sure Knut has some other good idea how it's going to create even more interest without having too high budgets for the teams, because I think that's the problem. But I'm sure he can solve it, and Volvo as well.
Just a final thought, Knut. Obviously, one of those cost-cutting measures involves teams who have already committed to sail in the next race. After March the 15th, they can't sail their practice boats, which means that several second generation, if you like, Volvo Ocean Race VO70s, Volvo 70s will be available. Do you see more people now perhaps being on the start line?
Well, I guess that was one of the ideas, and I have tried myself to get money for a campaign that would use an older boat, and I was so close half a year ago, but I never made it. I haven't given up. The problem sometimes is, of course, that many people think, many of the high professional, they think coming to the race in a first generation boat, not an up to date boat, makes them not become a winner, and I can understand that, and I have respect for that, and I think sometimes that is a problem, because if you take part in a race like this, you really want to try to win. Many years ago, it was good enough to just take part and finish in England. Now I think it's become more and more that you need to win it. It's very important. So that's sometimes a little bit, how should I say, it's harder with an older boat. At least it's a psychological hurdle that many has inside them, that they don't want to go with a used boat.
Now, I did say I had the last one was the final question, but that just leads me to one more. You obviously sailed with Ericsson 3, the Nordic team. In the race before that, we saw ABN AMRO's under 30 team. It must be, isn't it, important to bring the next generation of sailors through, and perhaps this could be an opportunity to do it?
It's definitely an opportunity to do it, and I hope we will see. My dream is three or four of the old boats on the starting line. I know right now it's a little bit up in the air, but it's not too late to find the money and do a good campaign with an old boat. So that would be nice to see three or four of the old boats on the starting line with young people from newer generation, and I hope that will happen. I still have lots of hope.
Magnus, you always have lots of hope. That's why it's always such a pleasure talking to you. I think in my perfect world, you'd be on the regatta start line and the main race start line. So looking forward to seeing you in one capacity or other in Alicante in October and November.
Thank you very much. And don't you worry, I haven't given up. I just have to find a little of some millions of money here, and we'll be there with a young team.
Magnus Olsen, thank you so much for your time, as always.
Thank you very much, Guy.
OK, now the second part of Yachting World's Matt Sheehan's interview with Team GBR boss Stephen Park. And if any of the other Olympic teams would like to tell us how they're getting on, get in touch.
And moving on with a focus to the British team, how are the British team doing? What's the state of play with the Brits? Where are they? Who are we looking at coming through to the top? And who's going to represent us next year?
Well, it's certainly a lot of questions. But you know, starting at the beginning, you know, we're trying to be in a situation where we are medal competitive in all 10 of the Olympic events and all 3 of the Paralympic events. Now, we work on the basis that if we do that, that on any given day, half of those, that number, will convert their potential into medal winning. And so therefore, hopefully that will mean we'll be in the 4 to 5 medals region in the Olympics and the 1 or 2 medals region in the Paralympics. And at the moment, the form over the recent World Cup regattas has shown that we are on target there. We are certainly medal competitive in 8 of the Olympic events and 2 of the Paralympic events. So we've just got 2 Olympic events and 1 Paralympic event to really get up to speed. And we're not far away, to be honest. So we're hoping that we're still going to be able to achieve that internal goal, if you like, such that we can deliver those outcome goals of medals that we've set ourselves. Now, at the most recent World Cup, we won 14 medals, actually, across the Olympic and Paralympic classes, which sounds like a lot more than 4 Olympic and 2 Paralympic, 6. How do you win 14? Well, of course, at all the World Cup events, you're able to enter a number of sailors in each of the different classes. When we go to the Olympic Games itself, you're only allowed to enter 1 team in each particular event, and that makes it difficult. So we only have 16 athletes in the Olympics, 6 at the Paralympics, in the 10 and 3 events respectively, and so that's going to make things tough. So the key question, of course, is, well, who's going to be the representative? And that is going to be the real test for 2011, where the RY's Olympic Selection Committee will be, and Paralympic Selection Committee will be looking at the performance of the sailors throughout the course of the year to try and select who those best sailors will be. And in some of the classes, for example, in the Finn and the 49er, we have 2 or 3 real medal potential sailors. In fact, in Miami, for example, we did actually take all 3 medal positions in the Finn class. So that's going to be really tough. And to name all the sailors, frankly, you'd just be nailing everyone who's in our performance programme, because you've got to be the best in the world if you want to compete for a place in the British Olympic team.
Does the selection process happen at the same time, or is it a different process for a different class?
No, we have a similar process for all the events, but we can deal with them all individually and independently. We don't actually put our selection process into the public domain, because we feel that that is part of our medal competitiveness. And of course, one of the things that helps us believe that is the desire for all the other nations to get a view of our selection process. So they're obviously pretty keen to see it. We're basically looking at a number of events, and it's the same across all of the different classes. It's just that we may well end the process sooner or later for any given class.
But the list of the ISAF main Olympic classes regattas, that's where most of the sailors are going to be, I guess, this year.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they'll be at the key events. So we'll see most of our team at the Princess Sophia Regatta in Palma. at the beginning of April, and then at the end of April at the French Olympic Week in Hyères, near Nice. And then after that, there are a couple of other events in World Cup events in Holland and in Germany, probably smaller attendance from Scandia Team GBR at those events. But everybody will then be at the Scandia Sail for Gold Regatta, which is at the Weymouth and Portland National Sailing Academy in June, and then at the Olympic test event, which will take place in July and beginning of August.
Well, an exciting season. We look forward to seeing it unfold. Stephen Park, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, we're joined this week on the Volvo Sailing Podcast by the race director of the Volvo race, Jack Lloyd. That's because a date has now passed where a rule that has been around for a while, but maybe people had a little bit forgotten about, has suddenly kicked in. Jack, what is the rule?
The rule is a rule that we brought in after the last race, where part of our cost containment program moving forward, we decided that after a certain point in time, that any boats that a team sailed had to sail in our race. And that has two things, obviously. A team that has two boats has to make a choice on which boat it's going to sail in the race or enter both boats. And the cost containment side of the rule was that about the time that we predicted boats would be getting launched, or the teams would be getting committed to having to make sure the area on the boat was finished in time for the launching, was the time that we would stop them sailing what would effectively be a second boat and a training boat. And the date was the 15th of March, which passed last week. And so from now on, apart from Team Campos, who we believe will enter the old Telefonica Blue, all the other teams need to put the boat they've been using, which is generally a boat from the last race, aside and concentrate on their new boat. Or if they sail their boat, then they must sail it in the race.
So that makes sense, but therefore I guess there are now some rather nice second generation boats, if you like, who sailed in the last race, that might now become available.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and that was another reason for doing it. With the economic times as they've been since the last race, it hasn't worked out quite like we'd hoped. We were hoping to have a 50-50 split of new boats and old boats, but no, for sure there are some very good boats around now, especially with the little changes we made to the new boats to try and keep the old boats competitive. It'd be interesting to see just how those little rule changes had worked out. So the only way that a team that's been sailing in a boat and is building a new boat can sail from now on, apart from Team Campos, is for media and PR reasons. And we set quite high standards for that, and the team has to apply to us in advance, 2 weeks in advance, and meet a lot of criteria before we'll let them actually use that boat for media and PR. We recognise that it's something that's essential for the teams to maintain a profile while they're waiting to launch their boat, and also for them to do some corporate hospitality just before the start of the race. So we're mindful of that, but we're also trying to restrict the temptation to two-boat tests.
Now, Jack, taking that on from that, another thing that I know you've introduced is a ban on two-boat testing. How's that working?
It would have been a problem after the 15th of March as boats start to launch their second boats, and also we wanted to stop teams getting an old boat and building a new boat and spending an awful lot of money two-boat testing for what we saw as very little gain and a very large increase to the cost of their campaign. So we were active in the rules and decided that we would ban it, and we have some quite extensive rules that cover the type of boat that can be used and before it is two-boat testing. And one of the things that has resulted out of that is we now grant permission to boats that actually want to compete in a race. And probably one of the first ones that will do it in a new boat will be Puma Ocean Racing. With they're going to be sailing across the Atlantic on the starting on the 4th of July. And there's several boats that meet our criteria, which are reasonably similar to our boats. So they would actually be considered two-boat testing. So we've given them permission to that for that race. And also we've got maybe four boats want to do the Fastnet race, and we've given permission for those boats to do that and not be considered two-boat testing. So we've tried to get away from the America's Cup-driven thing where they believe that they cannot be competitive unless they spend endless amounts of money two-boat testing. So it results in them, A, not having to run a boat that has to be in pretty much race-ready state and have another crew on hand for weeks on end while they're waiting for the right conditions to test what they want to test. So we believe that has been a significant saving for the teams not being tempted to do that right from day one.
Just have to ask, really, Jack. Obviously, all the boats in the race signed up to the race agreement, and of course all the rules of race that went with it. But has this caught anybody by surprise a bit, or have you had any people saying, look, we need to carry on practicing, we can't wait till our new boat's ready?
No, we've been quite fortunate in this edition where we brought in another rule right at the beginning, where once a team had entered the race, that would be the only team we would talk to about rules until another boat entered and so on. So it stops us having our race shanghaied by people that may not ever enter the race. So part of that has been, over the last year, we've had regular, mostly telephone conferences with the teams that have entered. And so we've gone through the rules time and time again to make sure that they can actually work to the rules that we've put in place. As the restrictions we've put in are new to this race. There's never been restrictions on the number of boats a team could sail, or the number of days they could sail, or various things like that. So we've just made sure that, without moving away from our aim, we've stuck to the rule as much as we can. So that we've been discussing these things for a long time, and no one's ever questioned it. And everybody's managed to comply. Puma, for instance, being in Newport, they've had their boat in the shed for the whole winter, where Group Armour sailing team chose to use up some of their sailing days to get down to Lanzarote, and they trained down there and sailed back 2 weeks or so before the 15th of March and did some sailing out of Lorient. So they've all worked their program around the available days.
Just a very final thought, Jack, and thank you for your time. Do you have a few possible entrants in the wings now that these boats are available? Can we expect more boats on the start line?
We're certainly hopeful. We've been working with a number of possibilities over the last year, but as time goes on, some of them disappear. But we have some very good possibilities that we need to cobble together, and Canute is working on those at the moment, and with a little bit of luck, then it'll happen. So we may get the seventh boat, and there's a real outside chance that we would get an eighth boat, but obviously there's now teams out there that would like to free up their boat they can no longer use, and put a few euros in the bank to help the boat, their new boat, get around the world.
Well, let's look forward to, let's be optimistic, eight boats on that start line. Jack Lloyd, thanks very much indeed for joining us.
A pleasure, Guy. Thank you.
Now, thanks to our friends at the Barcelona World Race, we can hear from Xabi Fernandez, currently lying second with Iker Martinez on Mapfrey.
The biggest risk always is the big wins, right? The big wins, and I think... The worst moment we had was the night before to pass the Cape Horn. We had more than 50 knots for all the night and quite nasty weather, and this is the worst thing, I think. You always think you can, drop to the water or something like that, and this is the most dangerous thing. And the worst moment for sure. We've been very lucky, and I'm very happy. I hope we keep going like this. We haven't opened the medical kit yet, and this is a good news. We are very used to working together. This is, I think, 11th or 12th year working together. And of course, we're watching the result of the regatta. We are very happy. And, well, it's not much left, no? We 10, 12 more days, and we will be in Barcelona. And I think I think we've done a very good work, and we are very happy.
A few places back in seventh is Hugo Boss with Andy Mickeljohn and Wouter Verbrack. First of all, Andy looks forward to life after the Barcelona World Race, while Wouter then tells us how things are currently aboard the boat.
It's an exciting summer for both of us. You know, there's obviously, we're going off the 60, there's the Europa race, there's the Fastnet, there's the Trenton races. Started the summer and into the summer, the J Class Regatta in Newport. They're all exciting events on the calendar. Got the starting in the end of the year, so you know, we've got to look at our calendars when we get back and see if anybody's still phoning us up for work.
Yeah, so we have had an amazing sled ride from the Falkland Centre up here. Now we have to make the transition into the trade race. Unfortunately, the trade winds, for the boats in front of us, are pretty weak. So there's quite a big transition area that we have to go through. At the moment, we have about 9 knots, which is about the force 2-3 on the four scale. We expect to have the next 2 days quite light winds before we get into the trades and make way to the Northern.
Well, that's it for this latest edition of Jibe Talking. Please tune in next time for all the latest from the world of sailing. And remember in the meantime to catch up at regular intervals to www.volvooceanrace.com.